Modern Mystics with your co-hosts, Dawn Fleming and Linda Robach, who are here to offer you a deeper perspective of what is really going on and how you can disconnect from the chaos and plug into a higher consciousness.
Welcome to Two Modern Mystics. I am Dawn Fleming, and so happy to have Dr. Susan Trout, co-founder of the Institute for the Advancement of Service, here with us today. In our last show, we explored the call to higher service. Susan's life work shows us how we, as individuals, groups, and leaders, can work together in a healthy and elevated way to support the emergence of the highest potential of humanity. Her work focuses on soul development, service, and leadership. But before we get into today's topic, I want to introduce my co-host, Linda Robach. Linda is a good friend of mine, an incredible light and mystic healer. Ever since I met Linda over 25 years ago, I have witnessed her answering the call to serve. And it is my honor to be doing this show with her, and we're actually together here in Maryland doing it, so it's a lot of fun as well.
Oh, thank you, Dawn, and it's so great I can look over and say you are my amazing friend and fellow light traveler. We've experienced so many blessings together over the years, and I want to acknowledge how much light you emit. Not only do those of us who know you and are close to you, but also to the whole world. And you are the beacon. I call you that. So, Dawn, as you said, we're so honored today to have Dr. Susan Trout. And she's going to be discussing the Awakened Leader, Leadership as a Classroom for the Soul. So, as a co-founder of the Institute for Advancement of Service in Alexandria, Virginia, Dr. Trout has been serving the Institute for 35 years. Currently, she is director of the Institute's Clarion Way website courses and programs, as well as their board president. She dedicates her efforts to sharing the transformative teachings from her three books in the Soul and Service Trilogy, and we'll be talking about that a little bit today. She works with individuals, national and international leaders, as well as groups and organizations who are searching for concrete ways to usher in the new world. I can personally attest to the value of Susan's work. And is it okay if I call you Susan?
Yes, please do.
She spent 2 days working with our ACT board 6 years ago. Now, ACT is a nonprofit educational organization focused on holistic health, and it stands for a community of transformation. I can tell you there has been a tremendous difference after experiencing Susan's teaching. Our board now continues to evolve and expand both individually, so as an individual, and as a full team. So it is a powerful way, I believe, to begin to step fully into what we are here to do. And her help has been amazing for us. So, Dr. Trout holds graduate degrees from Stanford and Northwestern universities in psychoneurology and communication disorders. She has worked as a specialist and researcher in communication and brain disorders in children and adults in Alaska, Illinois, and California. So, prior to her working at the Institute, she served 14 years as a professor, chairperson, and researcher at the University of the Pacific and University of California Medical Centers in San Francisco. So, welcome, Susan. And what an awesome background. May I call you Susan?
Absolutely. Please do.
I already said that, but I just wanted to make sure. I am curious. What inspired you to want to write The Awakened Leader, Leadership as a Classroom of the Soul?
Well, throughout my life, I've had many opportunities to lead in a wide variety of settings. And because I had no training other than observing and reading about leaders, I learned about leadership by being what I call in the trenches. Eventually, I became overwhelmed with the complexities, though, of leadership and the multiple skills it required, the level of inner strength and understanding it demanded, and the wisdom that was needed when handling what seemed like constant problems, challenges, and relationship issues in the workplace. And one morning, I awoke, and I was particularly wary and on edge because for months, the solution of a very challenging work situation had eluded me. I didn't know what not to say, what to do to move the problem towards resolution. And I kept thinking, there must be another how-to-do book I had not yet read that would help me out, that would contain the magic key to flawless leadership, which I thought that's what leadership was supposed to be at the time, of course. I assumed that when I found this answer, I would no longer experience discouragement and self-doubt. But the same day, later on, a very curious thought calmed my mind, and I had a glimpse of the meaning of awakened leadership. And I suddenly realized that the truth is, leadership is what it is. A form of service, it's a role, it can be inspiring and creative, it can be challenging and even dangerous. So I wondered if I assumed my leadership was a perfect stage for my soul's learning, then I could discover what qualities and competencies each challenge was offering to me. And so that very day, leadership, I decided, required going to school, not in the university, but in the classroom of my life as a leader.
Mm-hmm. So I know that that is so important for when we become aware, something just bigger than us takes over. And I know that The Awakened Leader is the second book of your Soul and Service trilogy, and that you wrote Born to Serve first, and that that book focuses on the evolution of the individual soul through service. And the final book in the series, The Clarion Call, focuses on leadership and group life in the Aquarian area. So can you say more about what you mean by service and what inspired you to write three books about service?
Yes. Well, many years ago, I realized that although my life had been all about service, that I was experiencing little joy in my chosen fields of service. And I realized that I did not know the true meaning of service, because I felt that if I did, I would experience more joy in what I was doing. And I also wasn't clear about what my true motives were for helping others. So I left my university professor position, and I embarked on a year's quest in search of an answer to a question I had had for years, which was, what does it mean to serve through God's eyes? So for nearly a year, I traveled throughout the United States, including Alaska, and also went to Canada, and I volunteered for people and organizations in several cities. And I purposely didn't tell them my credentials because I thought that would influence them and I wouldn't get my answer so clearly. So I would only say, I'm here for such and such time, and I'm here to help you out. What can I do for you? Well, finally, after some incredible experiences on this quest, an answer finally emerged that felt true for me. And the answer to the question, what does it mean to serve through God's eyes, I found was, to serve through God's eyes is knowing that it is not what I do that matters, but the love with which I do it. To serve through God's eyes is to show another way, to say or do the right thing in the right way for the right reason at the right time. So in 1980, I moved from San Francisco to Washington, D.C. I was called to move east, and I redefined my life of service, and that took a while. And it was during that time, soon in 1980, that I helped to co-found an institute that was dedicated to advancing the knowledge of service, just what is it, inner healing, soul development, leadership, and group life. And by 1997, I felt I was finally ready to share what I had learned about service by writing Born to Serve, which you have mentioned. And to my surprise, there was a book that followed that, and then another book that followed that, and I realized that I was writing the Soul and Service Trilogy. I want to just say something very briefly. I'll do about the third book, because that is the book that's to help us understand what it means to manifest leadership and group life as we move out of the Piscean evolutionary cycle into the Aquarian. Because the clarion call is the call to life and a call to action during this time. And I think later on I'll have an opportunity to explain that in more detail. So
I'm hoping so.
Yeah. And so the question that you asked, what is service? What do I mean by service? Actually, I've to serve through God's eyes. But in another way to say that is, you know, life is service. The whole purpose of life. There's nothing that we can do that is not service in some way, but it's all to awaken the knowledge of the soul. And with that comes serving with compassion. And compassion is a very important part of service, and it requires us to develop intuition and skills. But most of all, we have to be an example of another way before we can show someone else another way.
Mm-hmm.
So Gandhi, I love this quote by Gandhi. He said, "He would be a friend of God. He who would be a friend of God must either remain alone or make the whole world his friend." And that's what I think, in the end, that's what service is.
Wow.
That's really beautiful.
And I'm just really happy that you showed up to do that quest and you knew to do it. What a great adventure. So the next question we have for you is, like, I'm really intrigued by how broadly you define leadership. And with your view of leadership as a soul classroom, can you explain, you know, what this means? And do we have an inner leader, and are we each leaders in different ways?
That is a big question, and it's so important. It is so important. If we use the metaphor of leadership as a soul classroom, then we know we're going to be gaining some knowledge that we need and also learning how to apply that knowledge. And basically, the more we align with our soul as leaders, the more our groups and organizations will evolve and shine in the fulfillment of their destiny. Now, a leader's soul classroom, I've identified, includes many different things. I'll just name some of them. The classroom includes knowing what your soul lessons are, your stage of soul development, shadow tendencies, healthy boundaries, integrity, understanding the masculine, feminine principles of leadership, and what I call the dangers and the beneficent protection of leadership. It also, as a leader, requires a knowledge of groups. What is the group's soul lessons? What is the group's stage of soul development? Their shadow tendencies and boundaries. Basically, a leader needs to be one step ahead of those they lead if the group is going to evolve. But in thinking about this, you know, I can't focus on all of these things, but I decided that it would be really important to focus on the concept of the five soul lessons. Because the five soul lessons, I think, are the place to start for a leader. I selected five, and I'm going to highlight two of them. The five are vision, right relations, analysis, synthesis, and the ultimate soul lesson is standing alone. So I'd like to talk a little bit about vision and right relations.
Okay.
Vision. vision. For the leader to learn, and a group, of course, learning to formulate, sustain, and ground a vision is really the foundation or the bedrock that underlies all soul lessons of leadership. However, there's a lot of misunderstanding about vision, and I have discovered that it's the most common issue in groups. Vision and the grounding of the vision is one dynamic. You can't separate the two. If the leader has a vision but refuses to learn the skill of designing structures to manifest the vision, it will not manifest. So often I hear a visionary leader say they want nothing to do with administration, the running of the organization. But what the visionary leader who thinks this does not understand is that in order for a vision to manifest, that vision must permeate the structure, the daily operations, and all other activities. It even influences and permeates how somebody might answer the phone or send an email. And usually crises develop within a group when the vision is not understood or the manifestation of the vision. And if the visionary leader insists on not having anything to do with the running of the organization, that's a form of abdicating their leadership. And the leader really is responsible for leading the group in understanding what the vision means. And also with that, to teach what holographic thinking is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the vision and the manifestation of the vision to be truly awakened, so to speak, must be holographic. So I'd less like to define that and just say a little bit about how it applies to a group or an organization. As most of us know, a hologram is a three-dimensional image, and it's created by interacting light sources. And a hologram shows us the same image from any angle, regardless of how you look at it. And when you divide a hologram into pieces, each part contains the entire image within it, although from a slightly different perspective. Well, how does this apply to an organization or to a group that the leader is leading? Well, in the holographic model, we need to be aware of the whole with all the various different parts, the various different departments, the various different programs, the various different responsibilities, and so forth, and how these parts interrelate. And that each part in how it functions needs to reflect the philosophy of the whole of organization. And sometimes I find that organizations haven't even stated their philosophy. And that makes it hard to hold the organization together and for it to evolve. And the members of an organization reflect the philosophy, and they are key and play a key part in this holographic model. Because each member has a little bit different view of the whole of the organization and different responsibilities. But whatever those responsibilities are, they still carry the philosophy of the organization. So to keep an organization holographic, the leader and the members must always ask, who needs to know this and when? And how often? Stress and conflicts occur when this is not done, when a person doesn't know what he or she needs to know to do their job well. They make assumptions, they judge, and they gossip, all of which creates disharmony, energy drain, unhappiness, and stress. And so many organizations tell me, I don't know, this. Nobody told me this, and I didn't know this was happening, I didn't know, that kind of a thing. And if this does not work unless the entire organization agrees that they're going to practice holographic thinking. Otherwise, it won't work. And I have found, since I've spent a lot of time teaching organizations how to be holographic, and certainly my own organization, it takes time because it's like a brand new idea and people are not familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
The second soul lesson I'd like to highlight is very important also, and that is right relations. How to really be in proper relationship with ourselves, certainly, but with others. So we have to look at their physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. And I feel that the leader in particular, to be awake and to be able to lead from an awakened place in the soul classroom of leadership, must understand the human psyche and what are healthy boundaries and what are healthy communication skills, so that the leader can put into place the teaching of these and the practice of them. And I'd like to give you an example of the Institute. Early on, I could tell that we were having some communication confusions in our inner reactions and in our groups. So we started to develop a series of communication guidelines. And to this day, 35 years, we have been using these guidelines that were developed. Of course, some of them have refined over time. And we read them before every group that meets so that we are reminded of how to have a healthy communication in a group and how we can feel safe in a group. And the second thing was I realized that the Institute was having boundary problems, particularly, you know, when you're in a service organization, there's a tendency to say yes to everything. Well, you can't say yes to everything. You have to say no to some things. And if you say yes to everything, then the boundary of who are we, what are we doing, are we prepared to do such and such if we're saying yes to everything? So we have to discern whether to say yes or no. Well, our group really had this as an issue. We thought, I guess, at the beginning we were going to help everybody, regardless of what their situation was. So once boundary problem was identified, I knew that the only way to approach it, as with most problems in an organization, is to take an educational approach and teach self-responsibility. I've never found it particularly work when you correct somebody or say, you know, this. It's like if they are educated and have learned what, let's say, healthy boundaries are, then they can begin to put it into practice and take responsibility for that. So, and this actually happened. So I was in a bookstore soon after this, and this book literally fell off the shelf, as these things do, and it was a book about healthy boundaries. It was written by Charles Whitfield. And I brought it back to the Institute. We started classes. We started courses. Everybody took them. And until we learned what healthy boundaries were, and then people would say, such and such and such is happening. Do you think this is a boundary problem? And if you know, yeah, I think it is. Okay, what can we do about it to correct it? So right relations is so important, and with vision being the bedrock, right relations is right next to it. The other three soul lessons I'm not going to go into, but I'll just say what they are. One is analysis, which is ability to problem solve in a systematic, holographic way. Synthesis, which is how do you see the bigger picture of an organization as well as it's developing? How do you see its destiny? So it's a synthesis. It's another aspect of holographic thinking. And the last and the most challenging lesson, which is learned fully last, is to stand alone. Because when you're a leader, this is not an easy role. And it requires so much. So we have to evolve for within ourselves as a leader, inner strength, and feel connected to our spiritual essence and learn to love enough. Now, back to a couple of the pieces of your question. Do we each have an inner leader, and are we each leaders in different ways? And, of course, the answer is yes. But there's another kind of leader, which I call inner leader, which is another word for higher self, capital S,
yeah.
Soul. That's our inner leader, and our inner leader guides us in our life, and it protects and teaches us and helps us make decisions. and it also inspires creativity. And I think that what I'm seeing now with the mindfulness meditation that's now so common in organizations, schools, and groups, that this is a way to help individuals get in touch with their inner leader. Well, does all of this definition serve any kind of leader, whether you're a leader of your own life, which would be the inner leader, a leader in your work, a leader in your family, in your community? And I have to say, I think in the broadest sense, we are all leaders. We lead our own lives, decide what we believe, where we live, what work we do, how we allocate our time, and we have opportunities for leadership that, like preparing the family for a vacation, arranging for the care of an elderly parent, organizing a community event, mentoring somebody, heading a project, how am I going to spend the day? So in a sense, we are all leaders, and particularly leading our life, which some of us find that, of course, one of the greatest challenges is how to lead our life.
Yes.
You know, this is so intriguing to me and so insightful because I am in a leadership role, and therefore, as you're reciting and talking about these five soul lessons and all, I'm really thinking about how am I in each one. I'm sort of thinking about them. And this brings me to the next question. How do you describe an awakened leader? And would you tell us, you know, like the essential attributes, qualities, and competencies that people must nurture and evolve if they wish to experience their leadership as a classroom for their soul? And if you will, please give us the stepping stones to becoming an awakened leader.
Well, before I describe an awakened leader, I need to briefly define the Piscean-Aquarian transition, because these two things are very much related. This transition promises to imbue the world with an energy that unites the masculine principle and the feminine principle. With the masculine principle, or the masculine mind, the gifts of the masculine mind is clarity, order, practicality, knowledge, words, and the feminine unites with the feminine heart. And the feminine heart is cooperation, beauty, synthesis, connectedness, poetry, art, tenderness. And when we integrate those two principles, then we can serve our organizations and communities. And we can harvest the good from where we've been, which is the Piscean, and there are some good things that can be brought forward, and we can welcome change as the new Aquarian models unfold. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to add at this point that there are many, many people today who are either striving to be an awakened leader who already are. And I feel that an awakened leader can be someone who chose to be born into this world to become an awakened leader, or maybe already is an awakened leader and is born at this time on our planet, as you know, as we are in a challenging time of our planetary history. And you can see these awakened leaders becoming or already are in all sorts of work, all sorts of professions, all sorts of settings, be it business, community projects, healing and health professions, teachers, ecology, animal care, ordinary citizens, so to speak. And you can even see them in families as the role of parenting is honored. And it has been estimated, and this comforts me to no end, it's been estimated that 20 to 30% of the Earth's present population are already spiritually evolved and have chosen to be born on Earth again out of compassion to help humanity evolve during this time. So we have people among us that have dedicated their lives to service. In Eastern traditions, these people are called bodhisattvas. They are ordinary people doing a wide variety of work, and they would not even identify themselves as such. They may not even know they are, but they are very, very key to our present time in history and on our planet. So what does it mean to be awakened? Well, I think it means literally to wake up from being asleep to a fulfilling life and to a call to serve humanity and planet Earth at this time. To wake up to me means to be self-responsible for how I think and feel and act, or maybe to recognize a truth that I've not seen before. But to do all of this is to come alive and to be natural about it, not to make a big deal about it, but to be just, you know, very natural about it.
Yeah.
So there are these essential attributes and qualities that support someone in terms of transitioning from the Piscean to Aquarian leadership to be awakened. And I'm just going to mention a couple that I think are key. One is the being able to go from competition to cooperation, from making hierarchical decisions to shared decision-making, which I will describe in a little bit, and to move from separation of the leader and group members to partnership with leader and group members.
Oh, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
From personal vision to shared vision, and from individual needs to group needs. And what I have observed just in my many years now in the leadership role, that there are certain things that I've observed that really do nurture leaders towards becoming awakened. And the first thing is that to view leadership as an art form, it's an art. It's a process that leadership is crafted and always in greater clarity and beauty. It is a form of art. And also the leader to be one step ahead of those they lead so that they can lead them. And to know that as a leader, we are a designer, a steward, and a teacher. And the one thing I've learned is that people need a lot of reinforcement. You can't assume talking about something is going to make it happen. You have to work at helping or having an atmosphere where people are practicing and applying what they're learning. Of course, to teach and practice a holographic way of thinking in personal life as well as in our groups, to develop a philosophical framework for leadership, and to, as we've already talked about, to define what service means. And I recall giving a talk on service a number of years ago, and after I gave my talk, a person came up to me, and she identified herself as a well-known leader of a well-known national service organization. And she looked at me and she said, "You know, we haven't even defined service, and we have not even described our philosophy about service." And I think this is relatively common.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to define it, otherwise, you know, people make all sorts of assumptions. The other thing to nurture is a concept called emergence. Now, emergence really means that we have to put sometimes this left brain, this masculine aspect of the brain aside, and allow what is to emerge as the next step or the resolution or the understanding. We have to allow it to emerge and not have it pre-programmed in our mind how something might look like. This is very much something that an awakened leader practices. We do what we can, and then we say, "Well, let's see what emerges." Also, and wonderful things emerge. I have to say with this, because we have to like give up expectations of outcome. The other thing is important to understand that the size of the group matters. There is incredible amount of research that says, if you want a group to grow and evolve, there is a number that works the best, and that's to have an 8 in your group, the number 8. And I've experimented with this, and I can attest that groups of eight in particular do great things. Now, then my mind goes, well, if enough of groups, small groups all over the globe, work together and practice some of these principles, look at the change that could occur. But today,
well,
today we have all these huge mergers,
mm-hmm.
and people are so distressed by that. No, that's no wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is to understand the effect of change in a group, because change relates to loss. And sometimes when groups change, people go into their unresolved issues about loss and grief. So the stepping stones to becoming an awakened leader, well, learn from your own experience. And even when these experiences feel like failures, like it didn't go well, like da-da-da-da-da, if we learn from them, not make anybody wrong, but say, okay, this happened, what did we learn, and what can we apply perhaps the next time this kind of thing occurs? I feel the stepping stone also involves very important to have a mentor. Leaders need mentors who are a step ahead in their development of leadership and their service. One a man and one a woman. And that's what I have. One a man, one a woman. And I go to this mentor when I can't solve a problem or I don't know what's going on, and I just kind of give the facts. This has happened, this has happened, this has happened. What is it that I'm not seeing? What is it that I'm not understanding? And you know, over the years, the woman and the man, they state it differently, but they always agree with what I'm not seeing and what I need to do.
Wow.
Also, a stepping stone is to identify your soul lesson as a leader and what stage of soul development, which I articulate the clarion call in particular. Connect with your inner leader, your soul. Synthesize those feminine and masculine energies, which women leaders do so well. And the other thing is to learn how to practice shared decision-making. And what I want to say about shared decision-making is this is not consensus. Consensus is you can have different views and so forth, and then finally the group, let's say, says, well, I don't really fully agree, but I can go along with it. That's consensus. Shared decision-making, everyone must agree. But everyone agrees because everyone has a chance to add their perspective. And then out of that perspective, everyone has a voice, but it's a particular contribution that they make, and that the decision then is one that is everyone agrees with. It's not that anyone gives up anything. When we practice that at the Institute, if we can't reach a shared decision, we said, let's wait a few days or a week. You don't need to make the decision today. We need to be with it. And oftentimes we'll come back and we will see that we've all come reach the kind of the same wise awareness. So that's all a mouthful, I know. And you can see why it is a piece of artwork. It's actually an art form.
Yes, it is an art form.
And I am just so, I guess the word is feeling excited, and I've got to go dig into your clarion call book.
Yes.
So, Dawn.
Yes. You know, we do know that we do need awakened leaders in our world today. So does this need for these awakened leaders relate to your emphasis on leaders and groups applying what they learn, not just talking about an idea or a mistake, but applying what was learned by having that idea or by making that mistake?
Oh, yes. Mistakes are not mistakes. They're steps in learning. So we have to take time and reflection to determine, well, what was learned or what an idea might be. So if a team or staff member or a leader makes a mistake, focus on what was learned. So what was learned can be applied. We can use the richness of the learning. That takes it out of right, wrong, the polarity of right, wrong. And the reason we need awakened leaders in our world today is so that they can guide others to have this awareness about, well, mistakes that happen, sometimes they're the best thing that happens because they reveal something and clarify things so that the more appropriate action, for example, could be taken, the most appropriate understanding. So I'd like to give you an example that we've had recently here at the Institute about this whole thing about making mistake and then doing shared decision-making. What happened in a couple of years ago is that we decided to sell our building in Old Town Alexandria, and we had for 20 years a 1798 historic house, and it was very beautiful, and people really, we really enjoyed it. But we knew it was time to sell it, and we didn't need all that space, and we were moving more into the internet and so forth and so on. Well, when we put it up for sale, the very first buyer was someone who wanted to establish a French restaurant in our building that would seat 100 diners and turn our basement into a wine cellar. Anyway, well, we as a group, we reacted to this because we don't want that to happen to our building. We've cared for it. It had wonderful energies and so forth, but he was so insistent, and no one else was making us an offer. And over time, I said, you know, the heat's rising. We've been triggered by this. We don't want this house to become a restaurant. Well, I have found as a leader that one of the first things to do was to canvas individuals and talk about this in a one-on-one in order to give people a voice to maybe emote their emotional triggers so that we could move on to the next step beyond the trigger to calm the energy. And then we had a meeting, and the whole intent of the meeting was to say, okay, now let's look at this from our philosophy. And what is our philosophy? Well, our philosophy is to take responsibility for projecting any blame and fostering a win-win solution where there's not a right-wrong kind of a polarity. So we use the shared decision-making approach. Everybody spoke their truth. And in shared decision-making, you must speak to the truth with these three words in mind. What really matters?
Perfect. Mm-hmm.
So, do you know that those three words cut through a lot? I mean, what really matters here? And we came to the shared decision that what really matters was that we were not allowing this whole process to emerge. We were trying to manipulate it in a certain way. So we realized the situation had to play itself out, and we needed to trust the outcome, not manipulate it. So we asked the capital U universe for support and let go of our expectations. A little later, I think it was probably, it was just before we were told we were going to get a contract from the restaurant prospect. The day before we were to receive this contract, which we'll have to sign it, a woman walked into our building, loved it, and bought it on the spot as a home and office.
That is just an awesome story. Awesome. And kind of leads me to the question that I have for you. You said a woman walked in and bought it.
Yeah.
So what is the feminine face of leadership? And how can women be best supported in their leadership role?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I love that question. I love all the questions, actually. Well, you may have heard the Dalai Lama, the Desmond Tutu, and actually Pope Francis say these words, "Women will save the world."
Yes.
Perhaps, yes. I think it's more accurate to say the feminine principle will save the world. Mm-hmm. Because women, because of their strong feminine principle, have an innate capacity to not only use the feminine principles, but they can bring together, synthesize the feminine principles with the masculine principles. And it's harder for a man to do that. It's easier for a woman because of the nature of her psyche to do that. So a woman's leadership style has the potential of being process-oriented, relationship-focused, intuitive, collaborative. It's from the heart. And can combine with the masculine, which is more product-oriented, analytical, problem-solving, and verbal. And research and metaphysical teachings say it is the heart that informs the mind, not the mind informing the heart. So the feminine informs the masculine, feminine mind informs the masculine mind. So women leaders can be knowledgeable about many, many things, and they can balance reflection with action. And of course, If a man is a leader with a masculine, he can also, I've been absolutely aware of calling upon some of the feminine principles. So it's not like an absolute either or. It's really, that's why I like to call it bringing the two, synthesizing the two together, whether you are in a woman's body or a man's body. So,
right.
Yeah. So how can this be supported? And before that, I just want to mention, I don't feel like it's appropriate to go into, but women do have to be mindful that there are traits of the women that of the feminine that can get them into trouble, like not taking care of themselves and so forth. There's to be mindful of that, some of that too. Well, how can women be supported? I think a lot of it is the supporting young women, educating them to believe in themselves, and also educating men and supporting them in a non-threatening way. An ongoing support of women in leadership roles, having a woman mentor, as well as, I said, a man mentor, who actually is sensitive to the gifts of women. And having, and this is something that I find is very important, is having at least one woman in the workplace who the leader trusts and who accepts the leader's efforts unconditionally. In fact, this person, when the leader walks in the room, will light up. And this woman serves as an anchor for the woman leader's potential. And it's important to look for who that might be for yourself.
Oh, yes, that's very interesting.
Okay, now, Susan, we're kind of getting short on time, so
okay.
I'm going to give you a final question, and then you can give us the answer to that, and then any other comments that you would like to close with.
Okay.
So how can group members support their leader?
Oh, that is so important. And, you know, it's such a gift when someone asks you that as a leader. How can
that
I support you? It is such a gift, and it doesn't come very often that a group member will say, you know, how can I support you? The first time someone asked me, I didn't even know how to answer it. So I've learned more about how to answer it. And one thing is to please look at me as a human being. I'm evolving. I'm growing like everybody else. I make mistakes. I know they're learning opportunities. But don't separate me out as being different. I'm on this path along with you. I just have a different role. And you have a role. Everybody has a different role, whatever that is. One's not better than the other. That seems to be really important. The other thing is if the members can support the leader, if they have the attitude of to help manifest the vision and mission by saying, by offering in the spirit of, oh, if I did such and such, my group's vision would be closer to realization. So someone can support the leader by saying, you know, I think if I did such and such, we would be closer to our realizing or manifesting our vision. That is very supportive. And to ask inquiry questions, check out assumptions. you know, not carry questions around. I find that people can be very uncomfortable asking questions. But if, for a leader, if you don't, someone doesn't ask the question, you don't know that they might have an assumption that they're carrying around that's not true. Keep our word. Be prepared to keep our word, because keeping our word is the first rung on the ladder of trust, and not to procrastinate. Be honest and say, you know, I thought I could do this, but I have to renegotiate it because I can't. But not to tell the leader and just not do it is not supportive.
Right.
So some people don't want to be a leader because they feel overwhelmed, discouraged, burned out, et cetera, because the role does demand quite a bit. You have to really feel it's part of your destiny and you want to learn it. And as you know, in today's world, leaders are feeling overburdened by long work hours, being constantly connected to smartphone, iPad, laptop, emails, and being bogged down with management issues or with problems that they have to manage. And what happens is that under those conditions, great stress occurs, so the leader becomes stressed, unhappy, and rushed.
Yeah.
And so I think my concluding comments is, okay, what do we do if we are stressed, unhappy, and rushed as a leader? Well, we must be truthful, and truth heals. I have to really look at, am I ready and do I want to be a leader? Is this a part of my calling of service? Am I willing to take care of myself, slow down? Because I know if I don't do that, I will develop a health issue. Can I set priorities? Can I strengthen my spiritual connection? Can I lead from an Aquarian perspective, which leaders feel far less alone from an Aquarian perspective? And can I look at my soul lesson and my stage of soul development? And can I understand that it's so important to be close to nature and to feel the presence of beauty and to be creative in our life? So I'd like to close with a poem that, saying this poem to as a leader to yourself and to all of those that you that a leader is responsible for, with, and this is the poem by, and it's by Theodore Roszak. You and I, we meet as strangers, each carrying a mystery within us. I may never know who you are. I may never know you completely. But I trust that you are a person in your own right, possessed of a beauty and value that are Earth's richest treasures. So I make this promise to you. I will impose no identities upon you, but will invite you to become yourself without shame or fear. I will hold open a space for you in the world and defend your right to fill it with an authentic vocation and purpose. For as long as your search takes, you have my loyalty.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Can I breathe that in?
I know. So after listening to all that you had to share, you know, to become an awakened leader really is a classroom for the soul and an evolving one that just occurs over time. So, Susan, thank you so much for being on our show, sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and energy with Linda and I and our listeners. And your work on this planet, it's very much appreciated, and we thank you for answering your call to showing us how to be awakened leaders, how to be responsible individuals and members of groups. So I want everyone to check out Dr. Susan Trout's books, Born to Serve, The Awakened Leader, Leadership as a Classroom of the Soul, and The Clarion Call, Leaders and Group Life in the Aquarian Age. These are excellent books guiding us on how to bring out our highest potential, and they can be purchased at the Institute for Advancement of Services website, and that website is www.ias, and there's a dash, and the rest is online.org. So ias-online.org. And check out her website. There's online classes there as well as upcoming classes and events at the Institute. And, you know, this brings me to announcements. So, Linda, do you have anything coming up?
I do, but I think right now I'm just in awe, and I'm going to not speak about it right now.
Okay. And my only announcement is on April 16th, I'm going to have a CE teleconference. So it's a workshop on how to become a continuing education provider. And that is at 8 p.m. on April 16th. And if you need any information on how to sign up for that, you can check out my website at energytransformations.org. And for those of you tuning in for the first time because you know Susan, feel free to tune into our other shows. And that website is www.blogtalkradio.com/2modernmystics. Once again, Susan, thank you so much for sharing and for making our planet a better place and for giving us a way to truly serve from a place of wholeness. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in and sharing our show with others. We greatly appreciate you helping us to spread the light on the planet. Thank you so much, Susan.
And thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
I've enjoyed
Namaste.
It. Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.